Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, a big show planned for you. Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham. We'll talk college football for the weekend. We'll also talk about the coaching carousel, one that has already gotten started with Jim McElwain's ouster at Florida. So we'll talk about a number of things. We'll talk about the Ole Miss job a little bit, Arkansas, a number of things with Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham, and we'll also talk college basketball, the college basketball season, just a week away. And Matt Norlander of CBS Sports, he recently broke down every team from 1 through 300 and whatever that was, from Duke to Mississippi Valley and everyone in between. We'll talk to him about the SEC, about Ole Miss. Looks like the SEC has a chance to be loaded, really, for the first time in a long time. So we'll get to both of those guys in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. It's right next to the Oxford Exxon. So you can fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then fill up at the Oxford Crystal. You pick any five right now of your Crystal favorites. Mix five for five. That can include the hand-spun shakes. That can include an icy, the spicy chick, the regular chick. It's all there. They still have the breakfast. The loaded hash brown scrambler bowl combo is there as well. That includes sausage, gravy, eggs, cheese, and the crispers there at the Oxford Crystal. Don't forget 79-cent original crystals all day. Pumpkin spice milkshake or hot cocoa as 'tis the season. And then all weekend long, 49-cent wings. 49-cent wings Saturday and Sunday. So if you're not making the trip to Lexington, you're hanging out at home, just kind of putting some stuff together. Maybe you're going to do Ole Miss and Kentucky and then LSU, Alabama. Get those wings, 49-cent wings from Crystal, and you can have a party there at the house. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. It is a very easy car buying experience. And then it's up to you when you get the quote, though. You get the quote. You can shop it around. You can call a bunch of dealers, see if you can't find a better offer. I don't think you will. I think you'll end up coming right back to that deal that Corey gave you at Clark Ford. And you'll join the long list of podcast listeners from Cape Girardeau to Biloxi, from Dallas to Atlanta, who have taken advantage of the great deals at Clark Ford. And then to make your deal even better, tell Corey at the end, say, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention, obviously, this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Any of the above, $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford in Amory. Again, that number, 662-257-1900. So without further ado, let's go to Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham and talk some college football here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. All right, Ryan, you normally go with us on Friday. As I told you the other day, you're wildly popular. People always... They always want to hear either from Ryan Brown or the guy in Birmingham. So you're one way or the other. We're probably not doing an Oxford Exxon podcast on Friday because of Chase's travel. So welcome back into the Beer Garden. Hope you have a beverage of choice soon. So I guess today was like a national day of mourning, and as we tape this on Wednesday. It's the day after Alabama was shunned by the playoff committee. Alabama, number two. I'm guessing people are pretty pissed.
Well, you know, this may be a little bit of a long answer, but last week on the show, you know, Peter Burns, the SEC Network, tweeted that he thought Alabama would be third. So I do the show with Jim Dunaway and Lance Taylor. Those are the guys I do the show with. And Jim brought up that he agreed with Peter that Alabama would be third. And I thought, nah, I just think Alabama has so much capital baked into this thing. That this committee goes into it thinking they're the number one team. They're not playing. So I think Alabama will be number one. Given time to think about it, I just kind of gut responded to that. Given time to think about it, I eventually ended up agreeing with Peter and Jim that had Penn State defeated Ohio State, that I think Alabama would have been third in this thing.
Oh, my God. And I think you're right.
Yeah, I think they would have been. I think there's no doubt to me that if Penn State had beaten Ohio State, Penn State is number one in this poll. And you would have Georgia 2, Alabama 3. And but yeah, here's what. Now, let me say this about Alabama fans, because I know your initial response is, or your initial assumption is, oh boy, I bet that did not go over well. Here's where I'll say Alabama fans have kind of learned the way this game is played. Their response is, boy, I bet Nick Saban would have loved to have been number three. And the funny part about that is that's 100% true. Saban would have probably given anything for Ohio State to lose that game and Alabama to come out number three in this first ranking, because that's the type of stuff Saban loves. Anything that is the opposite of praise, anything that he can use to get his team's attention, probably even being number two with another conference team in front of him is enough, but he would have loved to have been number three. So, you know, really the outcry isn't that great. And on top of that, Alabama fans remember the first year of the playoff when they beat Clemson in the championship game. Or excuse me, the first year of the playoff when they lost to Ohio State in the semifinals, Alabama wasn't even ranked in the first one. That's the one that had Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Auburn in it. So
I think Alabama
fans are pretty realistic about this. And while they get it, I mean, they'd like to be number one. They get it. Georgia beat a team that's in the top four. How can you not have Georgia number one?
Yeah, you know, it's the weird thing about Alabama is that it's not their fault, because I mean, who would have ever thought that Florida State would be where they are today? But as of this moment, this is not a criticism of Alabama, but they haven't. This microphone's being crazy.
Yeah, just fine.
All right, there it is. It's one of those things where they haven't beaten anybody that's all that impressive.
Well, you know, and here's the interesting thing. Let's play the what-if game. What if DeAndre Francois doesn't get hurt in that game and Florida State's defense is better? You know, if you just assume, all right, Florida State, Alabama, their only losses is to Alabama, Florida State's. They're probably where Clemson is. And Alabama is probably number one. Georgia is probably number two. Notre Dame is number three. And Florida State is number four. And you look at it and like, man, Alabama's got the most impressive win, probably. So, you know, that Florida State deal falling apart certainly has hurt Alabama's resume on that front. But look, if you're an Alabama fan, you know, if you go undefeated, you're not going to get left out of this thing. I think the interesting thing is Alabama's in a weird spot in that between them and Georgia, actually Georgia is the one that could probably better afford, assuming Notre Dame takes care of business down the stretch here, which is not a given, obviously. But assuming Notre Dame can beat Miami, can beat Stanford, can beat Wake Forest, can beat all these other teams they play. If this is what I think I would find interesting, and I think we got our answer last night when this was first released, Neil, a one-loss non-SEC champion Georgia versus a one-loss Notre Dame for the final spot. You got to go Georgia there, don't you? Because Notre Dame,
yes,
you cannot consider them a conference champion. And I think last night you saw that committee said, we really value head-to-head competition because of the way they ranked Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Penn State. That was all based on head-to-head. So, to me, Georgia actually came away last night getting really some of the best news of anybody in this thing. If you take care of business, you've got the tiebreak over Notre Dame. There's no way that's going against you.
Yeah, if they go 12-0, I guess unless they were to get just humiliated by Alabama and Atlanta –
yeah,
they're gonna make the playoff.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the case. I think Georgia is in really good shape right now. I don't think they have a ton to worry about. because, you know, Auburn is obviously a tricky game for them next week. And right now, Auburn, unless I've told, we've had people on our show from Vegas, Todd Furman from Vegas, who says unless Auburn loses to Texas A&M, which seems quite unlikely right now, Auburn is going to be the favorite in that game over Georgia, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But Vegas is going to have Auburn favored in that game in all likelihood, which is crazy to think about.
I was just talking to Woody Womack for a recruiting podcast that we do, and he made the comment that he thinks Auburn could beat Georgia. And I was like, based on what?
Yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense when you look at it on the surface. Auburn has been against really good teams. They haven't been all that – they haven't been good on offense. You know, they were bad against Clemson on offense. They were good for a half against LSU on offense. And those are really the good teams Auburn has played against average teams, you know, against the Arkansas and the Ole Misses and the Mississippi States, however good State is against those teams. They've done okay on offense, but when they've played a good defense, they have not been a good offensive team. Georgia's got a great defense. That is a weird, weird deal to me. I don't quite get that, what Vegas is looking at there, but they don't have all those nice hotels by accident. They know something we don't.
All right, let's launch into coaching search talk because it's I mean, let's face it, you're talking to a lot of Ole Miss people here, and while they miss being in the playoff, they're not paying a ton of attention to it right now. We got the carousel started. I'll give you credit. You said last week on the Oxford Exxon podcast, you said, "Hey, this death threat thing, this is not going to end well for Jim McElwain." And God. Congratulations, you nailed that. we could break down what happened. What happened. Who do you think's getting that job?
It's a really difficult question because, and you and I have talked about this on that podcast, that the Florida job, while great in some aspects, it can be difficult because of the fan base. Because they've got a historic figure that's lingering around that program now doing a lot of talking that makes it difficult. It's a new money fan base that expects winning and winning on a championship level, and there's almost no excuse for you not to. So you've got all of those things that make it really, really difficult, yet it's really good because facilities are on their way to being as good as anyone's in the country. The recruiting base is better than anyone's in the country. You're in the right division of the conference, though Georgia obviously is a really strong team. You're in the SEC. I mean, you got a lot going for you. Money is no issue. So you got all those things that are good, but it does. There are some things that make it a difficult job. So it takes a special kind of, there's a word you could use here that's very descriptive, but a Nick Saban, Urban Meyer type that will not take anything off anybody and is not afraid to tell you, get out of my office, I'm the head football coach. No matter how much money you donate to the school or how much power you have at the school, they run the show. They have autonomy.
So when you hear
– that's what you need.
When you hear Scott Strickland say, we want to make Florida football fun again, that's not bringing in one of those guys. Or is it?
To what I heard in that was, we're going to be good on offense again. When I heard Scott Strickland say, let's make Florida football fun again, what I heard Scott Strickland say is, we're not going to suck on offense anymore the way we did under Muschamp and the way we did under McElwain. That's the other thing about this is I think Florida fans, because of Spurrier and Meyer, they have been geared to think you've got to be dynamic on offense to be great. And I guess they could be right because in these times they've struggled, they've really sucked on offense. You know, I'll tell you, a guy who didn't start his career this way but became a really good offensive coach, has the personality I'm talking about, and has the natural ties to the school is Bob Stoops. And I know he's told them no on several occasions, and I guess you have to wonder about his drive, his desire, his commitment, if he's going to walk away from national power Oklahoma like that. But I certainly gauge his interest if I'm Scott Strickland because I think he's got all the right things to be successful there.
I just have to take him at his word when he says, I'm out of coaching for a while. It's hard for me to believe that he walks away right before the start of this season and then, bam, early December, he's back in the grind, working his ass off, rebuilding a program in Florida. in the same division as his brother. I just don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would be, yeah, and all those things are true, and that would make it difficult. But I would also look at the flip side is if he wants to coach again, what are the odds I'm going to get of Florida? You know, what am I going to get if I decide to coach again? Because a lot of people before Brian Kelly kind of turned it around this year, a lot of people said he's just going to bide his time for Notre Dame. Well, Florida's an infinitely better job in Notre Dame. Notre Dame has all the things that make Florida bad without the recruiting base, without the success, you know, without all those things. So why do you want Notre Dame if you could have Florida? So I don't know. I mean, you know, and this, well, I'll save the John Gruden talk for, I'm sure we'll get to Tennessee at some point, but he's just not one of the, well, I'll save that for Tennessee. Chip Kelly is the other guy. Chip Kelly is the other guy that gets mentioned. I think Chip Kelly, to a certain extent, has that personality. And he does have that personality, but to an extent, he probably has the capital of what he's done in the past to demand autonomy and get it. I just wonder two things about Chip Kelly. Number one, that offense was so innovative until everybody started doing what he was doing in regards to pace of play. And number two, I've always heard, Neil, that he doesn't have the commitment to recruiting it takes to win in the Southeastern Conference. So that worries me if I'm a Florida fan about Chip Kelly.
Before we go to Tennessee, because this might actually transition us into Tennessee, do you buy Dan Mullen to Florida, or do you think that's just a media knee-jerk?
Yeah, you know, it's so weird. You have some people tell you he and Scott Strickland did not see eye to eye at Mississippi State, and you might know that better than me. I mean, I've never heard any of that.
I think they got along okay. I mean, look, Mullen's a direct guy. Mullen can be an ass. Mullen's can be high maintenance. And, you know, so he went right to Scott, and I think there were times that they went at each other, but what I've been told that Scott has said is, look, I'd rather not do that again, but if he's the best guy, I can work with him. I know that I can work with him, and I know that when he comes to me for something, that once we have it out and have the discussion, that we'll get on the same page and get to work.
The thing that's intriguing to me about Mullen from the aspect of Florida is, if I'm on the Florida side of it, is the one thing we've struggled with since Urban Meyer, really, is quarterback. We haven't been good at quarterback. And love or hate Dan Mullen, one thing you have to give the guy credit for is he seems to know how to identify and develop quarterback talent. So if I'm Florida, that is really, really appealing to me. His offensive style is fun. Now, I'll tell you what gets pointed out on our show a lot about Dan Mullen is his record against premium competition, his record against the Alabamas of the world and people like that is not good. And you cannot deny that. I just wonder how much of that is you're playing with respect to Mississippi State. You're going to have better talent at Florida. So if he ends up a quarterback the way he has done at State and surround it with Percy Harvin, Aaron Hernandez, I hate to use his name, but he was tremendous in college. Antonio Callaway, if he can surround it with that type of talent, how much better could his offense be? So I would look at that. But now let me give you a flip side on that, Neil. Here's the other thing about Mullen. Here's a guy that has twice tried to get the Miami job. He's been shunned. If he can't get the Florida job, you have to start to wonder, this guy seems like he's a little itchy to get out of Starkville, but he never can. And why is that?
Well, some people will tell you that it is because he didn't have the right agent. Some people will tell you that he bungled an interview at Miami. Some people will tell you it's a combination of all of those things. He's got Jimmy Sexton now. If he indeed wants another job, I guess we'll use this to transition to Tennessee. If he wants Florida or Tennessee and can't get either this year, it might be on him.
Yeah. I mean, if Jimmy Sexton can't get you a premier job, I think it's time to look in the mirror. I mean, that's what that guy's best at, right? He's best at two things. Number one, convincing schools that your coach is up for a premier job to get him a raise. Or number two, getting your guy a premier job. That's what Sexton is best at. So with Dan Mullen's, the respect that people, I think, have for him and what he's done at State, if he can't get a premier job with Jimmy Sexton, That's a head scratcher to me. I think it's time to look in the mirror and say, what am I doing wrong? You know, obviously I can coach. What am I doing wrong, though?
All right, what do you hear about Tennessee? Because Butch is obviously out. There's a story that's breaking today as we tape this on Wednesday afternoon that he played a concussed player at Kentucky. I'll never, ever, ever be the guy to play down concussions. But when you start hearing these stories from coaches on teams that have coaches that are in trouble, they're stories that are planted by people that are trying to make the final shove off the cliff. It's over. I'm telling you, done. You know it. I know it. We all know it. Butch knows it. I talked to someone earlier this week who said Butch absolutely knows he's out. Butch is looking for a way out, et cetera. So soon we will not be able to blame Tennessee football on Butch Jones. There will be somebody else there. Who's the guy?
You know, I think, well, and real quick on the front of the concussion situation, a couple things. Number one, you know how this works. This looks an awful lot like a school trying to find a way to fire a coach with calls and not pay a buyout. And this is way too important of a topic and a subject to be used as a pawn in a game like that. So
I could not agree more. But if there's a school capable of butchering a coaching search, it's Tennessee.
You know, the name John Gruden has been out there a long time. He's got everything. He checks all those boxes. He's got land there. His wife was a cheerleader there. Her family still lives there. He's got a son in school there. Put me down, though, in the camp that doesn't just accept the fact that John Gruden would be a slam dunk hire at a college power. It's a guy that has never recruited on the collegiate level as a head coach. He's got absolutely no tie, though. He could walk in any high school and they all know who he is. He's got no ties to those high schools, and he's going head to head recruiting wise against Kirby Smart and Nick Saban in a lot of instances, who are as good as it gets right now. And I think we've been guilty of revisionist history on John Gruden in the NFL. I know he won a Super Bowl, and I know he should have coached in two because he had Oakland basically winning the AFC before a bizarre ruling in the Tuck game. All that said, Gruden wasn't Bill Belichick. And I think sometimes we paint him out to be the Bill Belichick of that generation. And he just wasn't that. He's an entertaining guy. He's a fun personality. You love him or hate him on Monday Night Football. But I think we've been guilty of revisionist history on his time at Oakland and at Tampa. And I'm just not one of those that accepts that is a slam dunk hire. Whoever gets him wins right away.
Yeah, I'm not either. And I'm not at all convinced that John Gruden isn't telling the truth when he tells people, I don't want to go back into coaching. I like what I'm doing. I'm making a lot of money. There's no pressure. He's gotten used to that lifestyle by now.
And he's making head coaching money doing it, Neil. I mean, that's the thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, it's not like I've only made, you know, only a million versus $5 to $8 million. No, he's probably making $5 to $8 million to put as much film study as he wants in it and not be at the facility all day, every day, show up Saturday, do some interviews, go eat a steak, and, you know, call a game on Monday night and go back home to Tampa. And then in the off season, have an off season. So, I mean, that is awful appealing if you've lived your whole life in the grind to still make the money you made in the grind but not have to grind. I don't know how that's not just appealing to do that the rest of your life.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy that he's taking that job. I don't buy it for one second. I think it's far more likely that it's a Dan Mullen, that it's a Jeff Brohm, that it's a Matt Campbell, that they I've heard Justin Fuente, that they're going to try to go after him, although I can't imagine you're leaving Virginia Tech for Tennessee. We did this before. I look at the Tennessee job and I think, well, maybe they'll pay so much that it's a great job. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to get killed. People are going to get angry at me. If I'm Dan Mullen, I think really hard about leaving Mississippi State for Tennessee, and I ask myself, is this really that big of a step up?
Yeah, I don't know that it's a slam dunk that you do it. I think, you know, in years past, you would have done it just to get in the other division, maybe. But with what it looks like on the surface, and it's still way early on this, but it looks like Kirby Smart is building at Georgia, you know, that it's not as automatic, oh, let me get to the East, as it once was. Now, Florida's a different animal, obviously, but Tennessee, Mississippi State, Tennessee, it's not as much a slam dunk as it once was. you know, I'm always interested by the Jeff Broms and the Matt Campbells, who, you know, Brom in a small window has been really good. Campbell has been great at a place where nobody has succeeded. You know, Dan McCarney way back in the early part of the 2000s with Seneca Wallace, you know, had like 7 and 8 win seasons there, and they wanted to name streets after him. So he's going to get out of there, I would imagine, Matt Campbell. But, you know, you always look at these guys, and he's coaching a team on an Iowa State budget. His coaching staff was built on an Iowa State budget. He's recruiting on an Iowa State budget. And you always wonder, how loyal are these guys going to be to their assistants that got them to this place? And Jim McElwain caught some heat for this, and I think unfairly. Because if a guy like Matt Campbell takes the Tennessee job or the Florida job or whatever, you can't just bring your Iowa State staff with you. You got to go get guys that know how to recruit in the Southeastern Conference, know how to coach there. It's a different animal in this conference.
You predicted Arkansas over Ole Miss. You said they would come back from a 24-point deficit and that they would get it done.
It's the first thing I thought of when they hit that field goal. I was like, well, crap, I at least got the prediction right, as bad as that was.
It looks like it's over for Arkansas. So here's my crazy rumor of the week, and you mentioned it, I think, last week. I've heard from a number of people about Auburn, and Auburn wants to make a push for Jimbo Fisher, that Arkansas wants to make a push for Malzahn, that some of the money people really want Malzahn, that Jeff Long probably doesn't, but that Jeff Long might not get to make this hire anyway. So here we are, basically a week since you last talked to us. Anything more that you've heard on either of those fronts?
Not really, because the pendulum has a little bit swung back for Malzahn after the impressive win over Arkansas and then through a bye week. You know, he's kind of – Malzahn, it's a weird deal with him. Because he performs so well against these lesser-tier teams, these lower-tier teams that he faces, there's so many times where you stop as a fan sometimes and say, why am I mad at this guy again? And then he'll go play in LSU, or he'll go play in Alabama, or he'll go play in Georgia, and you say, oh, yeah, that's why I was mad at him. So I think there's still got to be some water under the bridge for Malzahn. They play Texas A&M Saturday, certainly a losable game, but Auburn's a 2-touchdown favorite in that game. If he loses that one, I don't know that he can recover it, because you lose that one, and now you got to play Georgia and Alabama, number one and number two in the country, who you haven't beaten in 3 years. This will be the fourth straight time he lost to both those teams. He could not survive that. So it's so, you know, he's in such a weird spot that he's on an upswing because he just hammered another inferior opponent, and that's what he does. Yet I think a lot of Auburn fans look forward and say, I can't continue to support this guy if he can't beat Georgia and Alabama. And right now those programs overall look in much better shape, and they're beating Auburn on the field every year. If they do that again this year, I cannot see him surviving that.
All right, last couple of topics.
Yeah.
If you're Chip Kelly and you decide you want to get back in it, and you can either have the Florida job or the Texas A&M job, which job do you want?
I think I'd go Texas A&M, and that's not to say it. It's a better job. I just think it might be a better job for Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that being said, though, the system he ran at Oregon and recruiting those players to Eugene, trying to run that same system and recruiting Florida talent to it, my Lord. But, you know, you got Texas talent, too. That talent is so good in both places. I just think here's, you know, anymore, the money is going to be the same, if not a little bit better even at Texas A&M. Facilities are going to be the same. Conference is the same. Money from the program is the same, if not a little bit more, at Texas A&M. The only difference is you can quickly be a hero at Texas A&M. You can only be compared to Spurrier and Meyer initially at Florida. And it's going to be hard to surpass very quickly what those guys have done. You go win right away. Look what they did for Sumlin. I mean, the guy went 11-2. But he beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa, the eventual national champion. They thought he was the next coming of Bear Bryant at that place. And it hasn't worked out. You go do that as Chip Kelly, win 11 games, they're going to fall in love with you quick out there. I just think the ability to be the guy at a place for Chip Kelly is way better at Texas A&M than it is at Florida.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. All right, last thing. Let's get your thoughts on a handful of games. We won't go through all of them because it's whatever. You mentioned Auburn at A&M. That's at 11 a.m. On Saturday in College Station. You like the Tigers?
I do. You know, the A&M has the – for a big stadium that holds a lot of fans, they've got the worst home field advantage. It's the weirdest thing. They never win meaningful games at that place anymore. So, yeah, I like Auburn in this one. I think A&M's a little better against the run than they have been in years past. Auburn is without Cameron Petway now for an extended time with a fractured scapula, but I think Auburn will be able to run the ball well enough. That's the key with Malzahn. If he can run it, he wins. I think they'll be able to run it well enough to win the game. Yeah, I'll take Auburn.
All right, Florida and Missouri, Randy Shannon. But Barry Odom is coaching for his job this month, and there's no secret about it. It's at Mizzou at 11 a.m. on Saturday. Who you like?
Did you see the over-under on this game is 61.5?
How?
That's great. I don't know. That shows you how bad Barry Odom is at defense. That Florida can play in a game where the total is 61.5.
Wow.
I think I like Florida in this game. As weird as it sounds, Randy Shannon came in and said, hey, we'll throw up open every job, including starting quarterback. You know, I watch Florida play, and you wonder one of two things. Number one, what did Felipe Franks do to upset Jim McElwain so he left him out there to take a beating against Georgia? Or how bad must Malik Zaire be in practice that he can't beat out Felipe Franks? So if they'll go to Zaire and it's a little bit of a change, I kind of like Florida in this situation.
Be a tough loss for Odom if it happens. I tend to agree with you. South Carolina at Georgia, 2:30 Central Time. Will's done a great job, but there's no way in hell, is there?
Your only hope, if you're South Carolina, is that you got Georgia looking ahead to the Auburn game. Georgia is so good on defense. I just cannot see Jake Bentley being able to have the type of game against that Georgia defense that he would have to have for them to win. So, yeah, I just can't see that one happening. I think I got to go Georgia in that one for sure.
Ole Miss at Kentucky. Kentucky is playing for a decent bowl game at this point. I mean, they've got some wins. They've got a chance to accumulate a few more. They got a big one against Tennessee on this past Saturday. Ole Miss, through eight games, they've played hard for eight. This is the one. If there's a candidate for Ole Miss to have one of those rollover games, it's this one.
Yeah, I think I got to go Kentucky here. You know, weird thing, you just mentioned South Carolina. Georgia essentially has the East sewn up. The only two teams that can really catch them are South Carolina and Kentucky. That is so weird as we enter November. But, that you know, Kentucky and South Carolina are still to play Georgia. There's still two lost teams in the conference. They can still technically catch Georgia, even though they both would need some help in addition to beating Georgia. That said, neither one of them are going to, I don't think. I think Kentucky does beat Ole Miss here. Look, Ole Miss has had to try to recover from a lot of things this year, but building a 31-7 first half lead at home and watching it slip away, on top of everything else going on in that program, I cannot imagine confidence is too high there. And Kentucky at times can be a decent team. So, I think I'll go with the Wildcats there.
Tennessee can win the Southern Mississippi Championship on Saturday at home. am I crazy to think Southern Miss has a real shot here?
You know, you got to understand here now, my last impression of Southern Miss is they lost to UAB over the weekend, and it's no slight at UAB. It's one of the great stories in college football this year, but you lost to a team that basically had a two-year death penalty. So I'm not real high on Southern Miss right now. Here's something interesting, too, and Butch Jones was asked about this on the SEC teleconference. Dormady had surgery, so a redshirt, and I don't have his name in front of me, the redshirt freshman is the backup quarterback, or he's a freshman, and they're trying to redshirt him. He's a true freshman. He's the backup, and Butch was asked, hey, if Garantano loses his helmet on a play and has to go out, are you going to play the freshman, pull his redshirt? He goes, absolutely. All of a sudden, they are painfully thin at quarterback. Experience-wise, not that the experience mattered any because they stink anytime they're out there. I don't see Southern Miss with a chance to win this game. I think Tennessee, as bad as they are and as terrible as their offense can play at times, I still think they'll beat Southern Miss fairly handily.
All right, last one. It's always the big super hyped game, Alabama and LSU. It's in Tuscaloosa this year. This game has not delivered in recent years. It's not Alabama's fault. They just line up and kick LSU's butt. Orgeron's won 3 league games in a row, but he hadn't played anybody like what he's about to play. I like the Tide, and I like the Tide fairly big. Do you?
Yeah, you know, the Vegas line is 21-22 points, and I think a couple – I think about 3 touchdowns is right. You know, the interesting thing is you look at the teams that Ed Orgeron has beaten. One of them is Auburn. And in the first half, they ran up and down the field on LSU, Auburn did. And Ed Orgeron made one small adjustment. Really, Dave Aranda made one small adjustment and basically brought a safety up to support against the run. And Auburn was too stubborn or dumb or whatever to take advantage of it and did not work the middle of the field. Alabama will not make that mistake. So if LSU has to commit an extra to the run game, which probably you should do right out of the gate, I do think as shaky as Jalen Hurts can be in the pass game, he'll have a field day throwing a ball over the middle of the field to Calvin Ridley and Irv Smith, the Alabama tight end, and these talented Alabama young Alabama receivers. So I just don't see – and the flip side of it, Neil, where Ole Miss always gets in trouble under Les Miles was they tried to beat Alabama at Alabama's game. They tried to line up and out-physical Alabama in the run game, and you can't do that. Teams don't do that. The way you beat Alabama is you get quarterback play like you got from Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton, Chad Kelly. That's the type of game you have to beat Alabama, and I don't think Danny Etling's anywhere close to capable of doing that against the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I said last thing. This is one last thing. Well, I might start asking this of you every week until the end. So I'm asking it on November the 1st. Of the teams that you've seen out there, if the football gods came down right now, and I guess they would, they're gods, they can be two places at once. Say we're, sure. They were both in Birmingham and here in Oxford, and they said to you and me, "Hey, boys, Alabama doesn't win the national championship. Just a little clue." And then, poof, they're gone before we can ask any questions. All they tell us is they're doing us a favor. Hey, go to Vegas, put some money on somebody not named Alabama because we, the football gods, are telling you Alabama's not winning the title. Who's winning it?
I think in that scenario, I would go Georgia because here's what I would assume happened. Is that Alabama lost to Georgia in the SEC championship game, and Alabama's only real meaningful win was Auburn, and that ends up being like a 4-loss Auburn team. And the committee would say, look, Alabama continues to get the benefit of the doubt with us, but we can't justify it this year, so we cannot put a 1-loss non-conference champion Alabama in. So then, in that case, I would take, if Georgia's good enough to beat Alabama, I would assume they're good enough to beat everyone else, so I'd take the Georgia Bulldogs in that situation.
Wow. You know what? That makes a lot of sense, and I would be so excited because as a – and I know you and I disagree on this. We're still friends. We're going to get through it. But as an advocate for the 8-team playoff, it's going to take something like that for there to be a clarion call for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, if the committee went Notre Dame over Georgia in the scenario I played out for you earlier, where you've got 1-loss Georgia, 1-loss Notre Dame, and right now it doesn't look like they would make that decision. But if for whatever reason they said, look, Georgia's not a conference champion, we can't hold that against Notre Dame because they're not in a conference, we're taking Notre Dame. That one right there might get the ball rolling because a lot of people would say, whoa, now time out. We got a head-to-head, we got 2 1-loss teams, and you're going to reward Notre Dame for being an independent? That one might get the ball rolling. Now, I don't even think the other way would get the ball rolling because I think most people in college football would say Georgia deserves that. You can't judge conference championships if Notre Dame's not going to play one. So you got to give it to the head-to-head winner. So I think something like that might indeed get the ball rolling in that direction.
Well, as always, you're very generous with your time. Thanks so much for taking some time out here on a Wednesday. And hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I'll do it, Neil. It is always fun. You know that. I enjoy the beer garden, and I'm going to have a beverage now.
Good. Enjoy one. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Our thanks to Ryan for his time today. He's always so generous with his time every week on our podcast. He'll be back with us next Friday on the Oxford Exxon podcast. This podcast is brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. You call Greg Jones, tell Greg what you want. He'll have it ready for you when you want to pick it up. Or you can do what I like to do, probably what I'm going to do here in the next day or so, which is go in and browse a little. You'll end up probably getting more than your stomach can hold, but it's great stuff there at LB's. The freshest cuts in Oxford. The bone-in ribeye, fantastic. The brisket's great. The filet mignon, you can get it bacon-wrapped or not, 6 ounce, 8 ounce. It's just a different cut than you're going to get at the grocery store. It's a better quality of meat. It's that exclusive grass-fed naked beef from Joyce Farms. They've got the poultry, the pork, fresh seafood from the Gulf. You have to try some of the sausages. They're just outstanding. My favorite's the chicken jalapeno. I like the chicken spinach feta. I love the ribeye sausage, the Swayze sausage. It's all there at LB's. Go in, find your favorite, whether it's for a meal or an appetizer. The fresh and smoked sausages at LB's are fantastic. Look on the left when you walk in. There's a beer fridge. Grab six of your favorites. You can get six of the same. You can get six different ones. You can try an assortment. A lot of Oktoberfest and winter beer available now. Tell Greg at checkout that, hey, I heard about LB's on the podcast, on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack is just $6 at LB's Meat Market in Oxford. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Community Mortgage is the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can get in touch with him at jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, whether that's HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, or more, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. Rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown at 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners. It's a $500 savings. Call him today. We're also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500s to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see just how great they are. Get in touch with them at austin@strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, austin@strategicpartnersmedia.com. The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip this time of year is inshore trips for speckled trout, triple tail. Sometimes that's called blackfish. It's just a great trip in November. You have part of a day. Go by, do a little fishing. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. Last but not least, the Beer Garden is brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, Their customer service and their work is second to none. Comer's an American standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the Beer Garden, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. Now let's talk some college basketball with Matt Norlander of CBS Sports here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. All right, Matt, thanks so much for being with us here on the podcast. Really appreciate you taking some time out. I know the season's about to get going, and your schedule's probably about to get pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is, but I'm so psyched and ready for the season to start, man. It's been obviously one of the most interesting, if not the most interesting off seasons I've ever had in covering the business for almost a decade now. But, yeah, we are just around the bend, finally going to get to some games, which is interesting in particular because the SEC, you know, we'll let you kind of launch off however you want to launch off here. But my lingering thought with the SEC overall is that this is now the fourth season where there's been an expected bump in the overall quality of the league. It hasn't happened, in my opinion, the past three seasons. To me, it's not now or never, but like if we don't see a huge increase in competitiveness nationally from the SEC this season, I wonder what will have to happen in order for us to see that.
You know, I tend to agree with you, and yet I'm going to read you a couple of tweets. These are all from Auburn beat writers and people in the state of Alabama. Brian Matthews, who covers Auburn for Rivals.com, tweets just a few minutes ago, Austin Wiley and Daniel Purifoy have been suspended indefinitely due to ongoing investigation, won't play in Thursday's exhibition game. How much of that are we about to see around the country, in your opinion?
Oh, my goodness. So this is real-time reaction here because, yeah, I am not at home.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that to you. I knew you were running an errand, and I said he's not going to know this because he got away for a minute and he's being a responsible driver. And yet this popped literally just a minute ago.
Wow. This also indicates to me that I need to get back home as soon as possible, which, of course, I will.
Sorry.
Okay, so this is – no, we're good, man. This is the first instance of player eligibility that, you know, obviously connect the dots with the FBI probe. You know, we can't say 100% that both of those players are being sat because of this, but it's Auburn. They already have had a coach charged. And, you know, I reported last week that, you know, I'd spoken with Bruce Pearl, and this is obvious, by the way. You would have expected this to happen, but Auburn was going to review every single player on its roster and make sure that all the T's were dotted and all the I's were crossed, so to speak. And here we go. So, yes, with Auburn specifically, you know, will those players be eligible at any point? And if not, does it reduce Auburn's overall outlook? Obviously it does. I mean,
yeah.
We have Austin Wiley, I think, on the back end of our top 50 on our top 101 players list at CBSSports.com. So that undeniably has an impact there. What other schools in the SEC will get that? I don't know. I mean, Alabama had a low-level staffer resign. They said they could touch a review and there's nothing to be concerned about there. And then the other schools involved directly aren't in the SEC. So maybe it's just Auburn, but that's obviously a significant piece of news. And with that, you would think that since we have multiple players, we have two players that have been sat with an indefinite eligibility issue, that might be, quote unquote, the only players Auburn is dealing with. But still, you can't underestimate how much Wiley means. And for people listening to the podcast, they know how good he is. Nationally, I still think he might be a little bit underrated, but that's partly because Auburn wasn't super good last year. They weren't on TV a ton, so you don't know how good Wiley is. But if he's not a part of the team, I think he is so good. And if you combo both those players, I think they are so good that actually, if you tell me they're not playing the entire season, it eliminates legitimate hopefulness for Auburn to reach the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. There's just no way they make the tournament without Wiley and Purifoy to a lesser extent. But without Wiley, it's just there's not a path there. I mean, barring something that would be just shocking. I mean, I just don't see it.
I can't see it either, man. And so, yeah, that in a small way also damages the SEC. You lose another team.
Yeah.
That could be, you know, top 60 level there. But we'll see. Oh, man, I can't believe that got released this morning. I do think we will see, you know, just a kind of a clinching thought on this. This is the first. I do think we're going to see more with schools that have been connected to this. There is the possibility we could see this from schools that weren't, because obviously there are other programs that are probably reviewing everything on their roster. So, yeah, and we're, you know, as we record this, we're, what, 8 days out from the start of the season?
Yeah.
So this should be the first in a number of headlines.
I'm going to get to basketball in a second. Along those lines, there was some talk a couple, 3 weeks ago. I lose track. It's football season. There's a coaching search going on, all that stuff. There was talk that, hey, there are more indictments coming from the feds associated with the basketball case that we referenced a minute ago. Have you heard any kind of an update on that? Are we still expecting that, or has that gone by the wayside a little?
I haven't heard. I mean, listen, this is something that I wake up every day, similar to the eligibility concerns. You know, wondering if we're going to find more news. You know, I try and keep up and track that and source things. I had skepticism when that was lobbed out there that we'd be getting more indictments. We haven't had that yet. My general stance on this is the FBI very well probably has leads on other potential programs and coaches that it can indict, but it has to get enough information. Like, there's a heavy burden on the FBI to actually levy charges. Let's not forget how important that is. And so for one reason or another, they might have 2 coaches, 5 coaches, 12 coaches in their crosshairs. Those coaches might not even have any idea, or maybe they know they're guilty and they know that. They know there's a problem coming, but they still have to provide enough there to bring charges. And so we could be waiting on anyone to, I don't think flip is the right word personally, but provide information of the 10 men who have been charged. Or they did raid the Nike Elite Youth Basketball League headquarters, you know, with essentially a subpoena to take all that they needed there. So they still might be getting more information there. I don't know when anything's coming. It could be tomorrow. I've also said it wouldn't shock me if the FBI, with the pace of this investigation, knows that it's going to take a few months. And then to get maximum exposure, you know, March 3rd, you know, a week and a half out from the NCAA tournament, we find out more.
That'd be a headline grabber. Okay, you, for CBS Sports, you ranked all 351 college basketball teams from Duke to Alabama A&M, which, I'll be honest with you, Matt, I cannot imagine that undertaking once you get past about, I don't know, 30 or so, and then you start going, how do I divide these? How do I separate these teams? Just the process of it, if you will, how difficult was that? I mean, I would have lost sleep trying to even come up with a methodology.
Yeah, listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen it already, do me a favor and just go over and check it out, because the process takes about a month. It's a lot of reporting, researching. You know, I make an initial list and then I just totally rearrange it. For the purposes of this podcast, you know, Ole Miss specifically was about 20 spots higher on my initial list than it ended up being. But it is, yeah, I contact coaches in every league, multiple coaches, and particularly with the one-bid leagues, I don't want to – like, I always have a little fun, and I take a couple of teams here or there, and I jump them up maybe 40 to 50 spots from what they might be expected to be overall, just because every single year we have teams that are better than are expected. So I'm just kind of shooting darts in the dark there a little bit. But I do contact coaches just to get an idea of, like, okay, how are you thinking this league is going to shake out top to bottom? Who's a player that didn't make an all-league team last year but has a really good shot, in your opinion, of jumping up and making an all-league team this year? So it's a ton of work. It's fun, but it is rigorous, but I love it, man. And the thing is, like, when I do that list, like, I remember before I was, you know, covering college basketball full-time, and I was, you know, I was a borderline obsessive in reading preseason content. And I do it because, one, I feel the sport, you know, is worthy of having something like that. But I know there are a lot of people out there that really, really love college basketball and would love just, you know, even if it takes, you know, an hour to get through that in a couple of sittings or whatever. Like, it's just, it's something that's all encompassing. Every single team is touched upon, and it helps just get your juices flowing for the start of the season. So I totally feel that from the readers and fans out there that just kind of want that kind of stuff in their preseason content. So that's a lot of why I do it as well.
It also kind of forces you as a writer, as a guy who's going to cover college basketball from now until the final buzzer on that Monday night, it forces you to kind of learn about teams that perhaps otherwise you would be tempted to kind of gloss over a little bit, to skip over in your mind.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, man. I got to cover every single team, and it keeps me up to date on all of them. And from a work purpose, that's why it serves its greatest purpose, is because I just got to keep myself honest with this stuff. And it definitely pays off in more ways than one.
Okay, you've got Ole Miss at 88. You write, had some SEC coaches say Andy Kennedy's team this season's a true dark horse in the league, so I'll open myself up to some shots here as I've got the Rebels way out of the league's NCAA tourney picture. Kennedy certainly got a lot of vets, but the SEC has wads of talent. It is kind of funny when you try to rank SEC teams. This is the first year in a while that even teams at 8, 9, 10, you're going, yeah, it's a pretty good club, because in the past it was, that's trash, they're trash, they're even trashier. It's not really that way this year, and this is an Ole Miss team that I think Kennedy really likes, yet you've got them at 88, which would be obviously way out of the NCAA tournament picture. What is it that you like about them? What is it that you don't?
Yeah, I will openly admit that I'd say there are three teams that I think – it's hard when I do this list, man, because, like, when I get into that 50 to 90 range, something maybe more than 60 to 90 range, I have a lot of stuff – second-guessing and self-doubt.
Sure.
I think I probably have Ole Miss too low. I have Indiana at 75. They're probably too low, although, you know, roster reconstruction with Archie Miller there. I have some curiosities about them as well. Let's start with what I don't like about Ole Miss. I feel as though with the team that I saw last year, bringing back all that they have with their size and comparing – their personnel to the rest of the league, particularly the incoming talent, which, albeit, yes, is younger, I think they will probably have matchup issues within the league that prevents the Rebels from finishing in the top six. Now, Terrence Davis is a really solid player. In fact, he was just on the cutting edge of missing. Like, he's the most important player, in my opinion, because he isn't a big, he's a vital guard. Rebounds well. I think he'll probably flirt with putting up 17 points a game this year. Borderline top 100 player. If he is able to play at a top 10 level in the league, they could be better, but there's a lot of really talented players in this league. You even take out the Wiley from the picture. There's a lot of talented players. So with that, I just don't like the construction of all their bigs, but I do like the experience. I do think Andy Kennedy, well, actually, I don't have a good temperature gauge on how much they do or don't appreciate him down there. From a national perspective and in the business, he's definitely really respected for how he's been able to just, you know, keep it steady at Ole Miss. There's something to be said for the fact that, like, if Ole Miss had had, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons where it was, you know, a 12 to 15 win ball club, you wouldn't necessarily fault Kennedy for that, but he has prevented that for the majority of his career there, and that's not really easy to do. So I do give him a lot of credit for that. I also don't think – I'm of two minds on this. I don't think that the Rebels are going to be incredibly deep, but I often say that depth doesn't matter – or not that it doesn't matter, it's overrated, particularly when you get to March. You'll notice there are only a handful of teams that truly can go 9 or 10 deep, and not only can they go 9 or 10 deep, they actually use it as part of their game plan. That is a short number of teams actually do that. So, but over the course of a season, I do think depth has importance. Like, if you only have really 7 players, 8 players that you're able to lean on, and 8 is even borderline, it's not the worst thing. You'll probably have enough talent, but you open yourself up to, if you have a significant injury to a starter, that's going to hamper you. And over the course of 31 to 36 games, I just happen to think that if you're not able to use and count on 10 guys legitimately against better than average competition, that has a compound effect on it. So overall, probably have Ole Miss too low,
but I'm pretty confident that that is not a top six team in the SEC.
You know, they lost a backup big yesterday in practice, Carlos Salenz. He's re-injured. Yeah, re-injured the knee, and I don't know that he was going to be a big role player.
No, he's not a huge factor, but still.
But like, it goes to what you were saying. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, if Olenichuk was out for a couple of games, he was going to be a guy that was going to have to step up. It now puts more pressure on the JUCO power forward, who's kind of the backup center, Bruce Stevens. It puts more pressure on him to play a bigger role and to adjust quicker. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair criticism. What's interesting with them is they love Devontae Shuler from Oak Hill. They love him as an on-ball defender. They love what they're getting out of Markel Crawford, the grad transfer out of Memphis as a defender. I think he thinks this is going to be by far one of his best defensive teams. And typically when his teams have been really good on defense, they've been kind of salty and they've overachieved. That's where it kind of makes them interesting.
It makes them interesting in the scheme of the league. Say big picture, Ole Miss defensively doesn't really get the juice as long for anyone, just from the casual fan perspective.
Sure, no, I agree.
But that's not who cares. Like, that's not what Andy Kennedy's concerned about. Like, he wants to win the games in the most effective and efficient way possible. And, well, Crawford's a nice piece. We'll see. A real quick question for you. Like, Cullen Neal's inclusion with this team and, like, in terms of how him specifically and how Ole Miss has done bringing transfers in, has it been as fruitful or successful, in your opinion, as maybe it should have been in recent years?
Well, Cullen's deal was just kind of weird because, you know, he came in and I think they were excited about him and they thought that he would be able to man some point guard minutes, and he just couldn't handle the point at all. So that led them, you know, and they were counting on Brian Tyree a little bit, and then Tyree had the knee injury when he first got there, so it was November really before he was even cleared to play, and so they had to go with DeAndre Burnett at the point. He had some rust, and I still think he's a better player off the ball than he is on it, and it led them to go with Neal a lot. And he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle point guard play. He was a guy that his best role was to come off the bench. Here's the ball. Have a couple of shots. Let's see if you're hot. If you're hot, we're going to ride you. If you're not, we're going to get you off the floor, because he was not a good on-ball defender at all. And it led to chemistry issues on that team at times last year. It wasn't necessarily Cullen's fault, but he just never really fit a role. And then when Tyree was finally healthy and took over that point guard spot, there just really wasn't a place for him.
Yeah. I always thought that was a little bit of a mishmash arrangement there, but I actually had higher expectations for Neal than what he ended up doing.
Yeah, I think Andy did too.
Last season.
Okay, so you...
Go ahead.
I think Andy had higher expectations as well. You've got three SEC teams in your top 20. Obviously Kentucky, Florida at 9, you've got Alabama at 19. For people that haven't seen Colin Sexton, I mean, he's the real deal. How good can he make that Alabama team?
He is the real deal, although I will say that my colleague Gary Parrish, so he basically assembles the top 25 and one and has ultimate. So the top 26 teams of the 1 to 351, Parrish has the veto power in terms of, like, personally, I wouldn't have Bama top 20. Because I got to see it. I actually think that that John Petty is going to wind up being more important than people realize. He's another freshman. Colin Sexton, yes, he is a burst of lightning, man. He is a lot of fun. I'm not convinced that he is going to be like a top six, top seven point guard nationally. He'll probably be a top 10 point guard. He will tremendously help this program. He is a lot of fun to watch. I would probably list him easily top 10 players, just most watchable players in all of college basketball this season. Obviously, expectations haven't been this high for Alabama basketball in a very long time. They do have rightful expectations, not just of getting to the NCAA tournament, but of at least winning a game. Matchups to be determined there. But handles it great. I would be shocked if he's not one and done. Can move so well. And I think that he will make from a national perspective, from a college basketball fan perspective, you just aren't tuning in to Alabama. Like, if they're playing a decent opponent, yes, but if it's Alabama versus average opponent, in years past, you just really have no reason to watch that game. Now you will, because it's not just that. Braxton Key's back. They've got a lot. They've got a strong sophomore group as well. So it's a young group, talented group. It's going to probably lose some games that it should not lose because of that, but it's going to steal a couple as well. I think Bama reasonably should expect, I would say, a 7 seed. I think that's fair, given what is on their schedule and how I expect them to be fun but flawed.
I know people could nitpick the hell out of your list, and I won't be the guy that does it. The team that I'm high on in the league, and you got them at 27, so you're not underranking them. I actually love what Texas A&M could be. I think there's a chance they're the second or third best team in the league when it's all said and done. Williams and Davis and Hogg, and that's just a really talented front court. What do you think of them? And then on the other side, you've got, and I'm not disagreeing, I just find it to be, it's the volatility of basketball. Michael Porter Jr. joins a Missouri team that was just awful, Matt. Awful the last couple of years. And now people are talking about them as a definite tournament team. You guys have them at 37. Just kind of give me your thoughts on those teams. I mean, that is, and Porter's great. I mean, he might be the first pick in the draft. It's so hard for me to see that Missouri team the last couple of years when they were just a train wreck and to think one guy jumps in and they're in the tournament.
A&M I would have in the top 20, but Parrish didn't want them in the rankings, so they are the highest possible ranking I could give them. They do have a little bit of a difficult non-conference schedule. And actually, I think if you look at their league schedule overall, I actually think A&M will be better than its record indicates, and this is me projecting way, way out here because I think Hogue will end up being a pretty solid stretch for. Robert Williams is a faceless monster, man. No one really knows who he is, but he's going to be a top 15 pick. He could have been a top 15 pick and opted to come back. I could totally see a situation where a talented A&M team, just because of its schedule, takes on a few too many losses, winds up as a 5 seed when it's really more of a 3 seed, and then could be in the Elite Eight if it gets against a 1 in the Sweet 16, and it's a 1 that might be stumbling a little bit. I could totally see that happening. So I'm with you on A&M. I think it will be the third best team in the league. I like Florida just a little bit more. I might like Florida and Kentucky. I'm still not even totally decided on at the top of the league at this point. Missouri fans, they should expect to get to the NCAA tournament because Porter's that good. His little brother, Jonte, is also very solid. I do like Jeremiah Tillman as a solid multi-year player, and because Quanza Martin's going to be an impact coach defensively right away, this team is going to be so much better on defense this season versus last. I mean, it's not going to be an elite team on defense, but it's going to be more than adequate. I have firm belief in that. As long as Porter is able to get his shots and play the game that he is best at playing, because Martin's coaching style isn't – like, you wouldn't think that Porter's ability and Kwanzaa's philosophy, they don't totally match up. So it'll be interesting to see how those things go. But Missouri fans, to expect to get to the NCAA tournament, I think that is a reasonable expectation, even with how bad the team was last year. I think there's enough there, even in a competitive SEC. Don't expect to win a game, but like, even if it's first four or 10 seed or 11 seed, that should be the expectation this year. And if it doesn't happen, you know, it'll be another case of, top three draft pick not even getting to the tournament here. But I do think that Missouri will just barely crack in.
Last thing or two, just as we kind of wrap this up, you've got Arkansas at 36, Vanderbilt at 46, Georgia at 53. I'm just kind of looking for teams in the top 65 or so. Auburn at 66, of course, that was before today's news. In general, Matt, if you had to guess, the SEC gets how many bids when in tournament time in March?
6. And I'll say them. Kentucky, Florida, A&M, Bama, Missouri, Arkansas. I think Vandy and Georgia will just miss the cut. By the way, Arkansas, like, played Carolina incredibly well in the tournament.
Yeah.
Has some key pieces coming back. I understand it's not a team, you know, completely all that well known nationally, or even maybe even within the SEC, but I think they have enough to get back. And that was a, what, 8 seed last season? Vanderbilt played a really, really tough schedule, did enough, got in, has some good pieces coming back. I think it's just going to miss. I think six teams. Here's what I think. I think it's going to be, and listen, it's so hard to tell right now, but give me six teams, and then you're going to have three other teams. You'll have nine teams in the league. Like, I think the three teams that'll end up missing, which is what I have, you know, in order on that list, Vandy, Georgia, Auburn's tough to tell now. Maybe Ole Miss takes the place. They're going to have cases to get in the tournament and opportunities. I'm talking like their final two regular season games and then heading into the SEC tournament. It's going to be that close. So you'll have, I think, nine pretty competitive, compelling teams in the league, but six getting in, and then I think the league will be good enough that, listen, the tournament can be a crapshoot, but if you can have three SEC teams break through the second weekend and six get into the overall tournament, that'll be a successful year. I think that should be the bar of expectation. That's my projection going forward.
It should make February and March, and then, of course, the tournament fun to watch in this part of the country. Again, really appreciate your time. I know I just informed you have work to do, so I'll leave you to it. And thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed it. And I'll link this story so that people can take a look at the whole rankings, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, man. Season's almost here.
See you, Matt. Take care. Our thanks to Matt for his time today on the show. Again, thanks to Ryan Brown and Matt Norlander. Hope you enjoyed that show. A lot of college football, a lot of college basketball, as the college football season is in the playoff run, the college basketball season a week away from tipping off all over the country. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. We might start taking a look at early baseball free agency, the NBA season underway, the NFL season at the halfway mark, some of the possible topics that we'll get to next week on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Until then, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Take care.